Okay, excellent. So what we're doing this week, I hope, is first to finish the emotional reactions that we have to Hevel and to the world in which we live, and then to move into discussing chapter 3, which is the famous poem, you know, there's a time for this, there's a time for this, there's a time for that. So what is that about? What is the message? And of course, we're going to see multiple ways to read it because there isn't one way to read it. I did want to note as we start, I got an email from somebody challenging me regarding the Ruach Ra'ah Ru'ut Ruach that we talked about last week when we were talking about frustration and the fact that I connected it with Ruach Ra'ah as found with Shmuel and as found in the story, with Shaul, I should say, as an Avimelech story. It's true, you could definitely distinguish and say Ruach Ra'ah is one thing and Ru'ut Ruach is another, and that, you know, honestly doesn't bother me terribly. It just, yeah, I think that there are ways to connect them, and that's why I connect them, but the idea of Ru'us Ruach as frustration stands on its own, even without the connection to Ruach Ra. But that was just, you know, from last week. Also, I don't know yet exactly what I'm going to say on Wednesday evening, but as of now, the text of my speech begins with something I learned with you this year in Shir Hashirim Mishlei Koheles. So I don't know if it'll remain in, but if it does, it's a shout out to you. Okay. We left off in the discussion of Simcha and Tzchok. And I left some sources on the sheet that were really from last week just because I felt like you might want them as a reference. I also wanted to mention, I don't see her on yet, but Esther Bergman sent me an interesting link. It was after I already made up the source sheet to an article on the Balashon website, which is worth reading. I know the fellow who writes it, and he's good. He does, like it sounds, Balashon, right? It's a combination of in language, ba lashon, and balash, which is a detective. So he does etymological detective work, linguistic detective work. So he has an article from 2011 on Simcha and how it's used. Not, he doesn't talk about Koheles, he talks about Tehillim and Mishlei. And it's probably worth worth looking it up online. In any case. We went through where the word Simcha shows up in Koheles. It's in source number 1 on your sheet with my little notes about what it means each place where it shows up. And I floated the idea that Simcha is really satisfaction. It's the opposite of the frustration that we said was in Kas and Ru'us Ruach. It can be physical satisfaction, like from having a meal. It could be emotional satisfaction. You could have either one. We noted also similar terms that show up. Nefesh Tov, Tov Lev, also connoting that kind of feeling. And we also saw the word Tzchok, which often seems to be an overt expression of Simcha, although sometimes it's just an emotional state as well. We have problems with Simcha, in that we saw in the book that on the one hand, we said God gives simcha to good people, and a person should be sameach. God has accepted their deeds. And then on the other hand, we said the heart of the fool is in the house of simcha. And we said that a person who is going to eat, drink, and be merry, sameach, is going to be judged for it. So I think we already saw the approach of the Gemara in source number 4. And that was to say, using approach number 1 overall to the book, right? The idea that this is a book which highlights the message of Torah in the beginning and the end in various ways, and therefore we should interpret the entire thing that way. And so the Gemara says, the positive simcha refers to when God rewards the righteous, whereas the negative simcha will be God's laughter upon the wicked. We're going to see more about this in Ibn Ezra and Rashi as well. So that's one approach. But I think that you don't need to take that approach in order to come up with a clear and consistent understanding of what Simcha is about in this book. To me, and I think I said this at the end last time, what Koheles is trying to tell us is that satisfaction is hard to find in this world, but God might send it to you. Be satisfied if you get it, but don't pursue it. If you get Simcha, if Simcha comes your way, if satisfaction comes your way, embrace it. You know, enjoy it. But don't go looking for it. That's the way that I would read the message, and I'm going to try to show this to you at this point. First of all, the world is not a satisfying place because of Hevel, because of futility. And that's something that you see if you go to chapter 2, the opening 11 verses of chapter 2, when Shlomo says, I said that I was going to engage in Simcha, I was going to get good things, and it's all Hevel. And I think that this whole idea isn't getting me anywhere. Schok and Simcha aren't getting me anywhere. Look, I tried to get wine, and what else did he do here? I built things, I had the gardens and the orchards and the pools and the servants and the silver and the gold and everything else. And at the end of the day, after all of that, I looked at everything in sentence 11, and the whole thing is Hevel or Us Ruach. It's all unsatisfying, it's all futile. You see it there. And you also see it in chapter 11, towards the end of the book, sentences 8 and 9. If you want to follow the references, they're also on the sheet in source number 5. In which Koheles says, you know, a person can live a really long time, and in all of them, be sameach, which I'm going to come back to that. But he says he should remember the days of darkness because there will be much of that. All that comes is hevel. And then he says, be happy in your youth, or I shouldn't use the word happy, I warned not to say that, be satisfied in your youth. Your heart will bring you satisfaction. Walk in your ways, in the ways of your heart. Follow what your eyes see, and know that God's going to judge you for everything. Sure, be sameach, while you remember that the world is hevel and you're going to be judged. So, the world is not a satisfying place because of the hevel in it. But sometimes, simcha happens for different reasons. Sometimes simcha happens in terms of physical pleasure. Right? Like in chapter 10, sentence 19, where he talks about, L'schok osim lechem v'yayin yisamach chayim, people make meals, feasts, they bring wine, and that brings them simcha. So sometimes you'll be satisfied from physical pleasure. And often, God will make a person sameach. So in chapter 2, sentence 26, I hope I'm not rushing this too much. I mean, the references are there on the sheet, and I'm hoping that that helps. But the last verse in chapter 2, he says, Ki la'adam shetov lefanav, to the person who is good before God, to the person who God views as good, nasan chochma v'das v'simcha, God gives that person wisdom, intellect, whatever das means, we've talked about that, and simcha. God gives simcha to those who he views as good. As opposed to the sinner, God says, you can spend all your time trying to amass wealth that I'm going to give to the person I think is good. Are we clear? Gita, you were going to say? No? Okay. So in the last verse in chapter 2, he says, God gives good people, simcha. If you take a look in chapter 3, sentences 12 and 13, he says, I know the only thing that you can have that's good is lismawach, to have simcha, to do good in one's lifetime. And he says, if a person eats and drinks and sees good in his struggle, matas Elokim hi, that's a gift from God. Because, as he says before this, everything has a time when it's going to happen. The most you can do is be sameach, and that's what God has given you. In chapter 5, sentences 18 and 19, the last two sentences in chapter 5, he says, Gam kol ha'adam asher nasan lohu elokim. Also, the person to whom God has given osher unchasim, wealth and assets, vishlito le'achol mimenu v'laseses chalko, God gave him the ability to eat from it, to get his portion, v'lismoach ba'amalo, and to have simcha in his struggle, zo matas elokim hi. That is a gift from God. And then finally, in chapter 8, sentence 15, he says, you know, you should just be sameach in the amal that God has given to you. That which God has given you under the sun. So, simcha happens sometimes because you do something that is physically satisfying, and really, what it is God sending you satisfaction. And here I wanted to show you a thought from Professor Gordas. Sorry, Rose, what? No? Okay. If you take a look at source number 7, this is a very interesting assertion. I don't think I agree with it, but it's a very interesting assertion. He says, all that is certain is that man has an innate desire for happiness. Like he's rendering simcha as happiness. So he says, the only thing that is certain is that human beings have a desire to be happy. It's inborn. Since God has created man, he has also created this impulse. It thus becomes clear that God's fundamental purpose for mankind is the furthering of man's pleasure. Am I the only one who thinks sentences A and B don't lead to C? Right? I agree with A and B. Number one, people have an innate desire for happiness. Maybe that's not all that is certain. But I agree. People have a desire for simcha. That's number one. Number two, God created human beings. Therefore, that means God is to blame for our desire to be sameach. Check. But to then say, it becomes clear then that God's purpose for human beings is the furthering of man's pleasure. Does anybody understand that? Am I missing something?
I think it's taking a leap that doesn't... It's one thing to say that pleasure, that man was created to have pleasure, but that doesn't make it the fundamental purpose. He uses the word fundamental.
Yeah, I don't really follow what he's doing there.
Yes,
I think it's consistent with some of his other thoughts about the frustrations in Koheles. In other words, he's portraying human beings as sort of the victims in this world because God creates us with certain desires and then frustrates them. But I'm not into the idea that it's the purpose. I mean, God created lots of impulses in the human being.
And isn't that part of our choices of free will, which way we're going to go?
Yes.
It's not fundamental. All this comes of fundamentals. It's up to us to choose which fundamentals we want to be as people.
Yeah, I agree. And I also don't think the book supports his read, meaning the book does not present that as our purpose. But I do think his main point is true, which is God gave us a desire to find satisfaction. And I think that maybe that's, you know, why Koheles emphasizes that satisfaction that we get comes from God. In other words, God is not cruel. He didn't create the human being with a desire to be sameach and then just leave him to his devices. Hashem also sends us the satisfaction. The key word that keeps coming to mind to me is fulfillment, but I think that may be a bridge too far. The, Viktor Frankl-izing the book. But the idea is that God is also providing us with satisfaction. Yes, Rose?
Also, satisfaction, like, for example, you can be a hard worker, you get satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's not, like, I think this thing that we were put on this earth, and to do good things can give satisfaction. Whereas there's this message of we were put on this earth to have, like, a good time. It's not that at all, I don't think.
Well, I think it goes back to...
And that's a mixed message that's negative here in terms of... doesn't make sense.
Right. I think it goes back to Suze's point, which is you make choices. You know, the desire for simcha and the many means of finding simcha are at your disposal. Now do something with it. You know, that's the way that I would look at it. Yeah, Gita. You're muted.
I'll never learn that. So this is playing with words, but if furthering man, I think furthering man's pleasure, and then I think of the holiday we call Simchat Torah.
Yeah.
So is that tied in with this? In other words, maybe the pleasure we're getting is from studying Torah. I mean, this is a drash, I guess.
I mean, it's certainly not gorgeous.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, Gordas is going to look at you like, wait, I didn't say that.
I knew him. He wouldn't say that.
No. I mean, it's definitely consistent with elements of Koheles, yes. Yeah, Ricky.
Since everyone is in a different place on the spectrum, I think that there is opportunities here for Simcha in different levels and in different for different people because we're not all the same.
Right. I would agree with that. So he says you should be in a state of Simcha because, as we've already read, everything has a time when it will happen, right? And he told us in chapter 3, sentences 12 and 13, I'm not going to revisit them because we just read them. Everything has a time when it's going to happen, and the most you can do is be sameach. That's what God has given you. So, okay, be sameach. You have simcha? Enjoy it. If you take a look at chapter 3, sentence 22, this is the last line in the chapter that's about the relationship between us and God and us and our world. He says, V'ra'isi, I saw, last sentence in chapter 3, Ki ein tov me'asher yismach ha'adam b'ma'asa, ki hu chalko. There's nothing better than for a person to be sameach in his deeds. That is his portion. He doesn't know what's going to come next. So he should be sameach with what he has. And we saw it in chapter 8, sentence 15 also. I'm not going to revisit it because we just saw it. But he talked about being sameach in your amal. Why does Koheles want you to be sameach? Why is Koheles promoting being sameach?
Is that possible? Possible gratitude rather than in whatever you have, rather than in order to be grateful, and that's what it's promoting, that sameach, rather than to be ingrate. So the satisfaction shouldn't be, it's not about really having, it's just gratitude. It's
so that's an approach in Rashi. If you take a look at source 10, I'm jumping 9 for a second, because Rose's answer goes with 10. Rashi says, be sameach because God gave it to you. You, the righteous person, God desired your good deeds. You're going to merit the next world. So, you know, go eat in simcha. God gave this to you. And yeah, I think there's an element, perhaps, of gratitude towards God. So fine, you should be sameach for that reason. Rebecca, I see your hand. Just give me 1 second, because I want to just do another source first. If you go back to 9, Rashi gives you a much more pragmatic approach for why you should be sameach. Rashi says, you know why you should be sameach? Because it'll keep you out of trouble. He says, Kol mi she'eino sameach b'chelko, someone who's not happy with what he has, v'shatuf achar ha'mamon, and he forever is going after money, balidei averos, he's going to end up sinning, gezel, theft, ona'ah, harming people with ona, I didn't translate it. It's abuse of one's financial power over somebody else in various forms. Ribis, usury. V'she'eno sameach b'chelko. And if a person is not sameach in his portion, le'yin avas ishto, as far as love of his wife, so shatuf achrei anashim laharher acharei shesish, then he's going to get himself in trouble. He says, the reason why you should be sameach with what you have is because it will keep you out of trouble. First approach is, because God gave it to you, so you should enjoy it, / maybe also you should be grateful for it. Second approach is the first one that I present here is very pragmatic. Like, if you don't, then you're going to have problems. That's another idea. Rebecca.
I was wondering, and it probably goes to the first explanation for Simcha, if we look at where Simcha is, like in the Torah, Samach b'chagecha, like, and why we're told, like, why we have Simcha on certain holidays, etc., which is a gratitude, etc. I'm just wondering if you could tie one to that.
What do you mean? I'm...
You're saying, why is he saying we should be Sameach? So we look at those instances in the Torah where we're told to be Sameach.
Right.
And I think they are about appreciating what you have and gratitude. That's why I hear that explanation.
Right. I hear that. And you can make the argument also that the Simcha of those holidays also has... So I'm just getting background noise. Also has pragmatic goals. There are pragmatic goals to the simcha of the holiday as well, in, you know, whether in terms of unifying people or all the different benefits of the, of Aliyah LaRegel and so on. So you can make the argument for pragmatism there also. I saw a note in the chat. Bruria asked the question of whether, that was just to me. Never mind. I didn't realize that. It came through on a preview. So I'll leave it. But it's a good question. I don't have an answer.
It's okay. But you could ask.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. I'm usually careful about that, but I didn't see
the... Don't worry about it. I didn't realize who I said it to. It's okay.
Okay. Was Kohelas Sameach when he wrote this? Is the question. I don't know. He doesn't sound it.
No.
That's for sure. Yes, I think, Moish, you were trying to say something?
Hi, do you have me?
Yes.
Am I on?
Yep.
Okay. I'd like to address the issue of Simcha. First thing is that the essence of God, the universe, and all human beings is that of creation. That is the essence. That is the average. Now, when we think about our own creation, you go to weddings, Shema Brachas, the one word that keeps coming up is Simcha. And I think that what we learn from that is that we want the relationship in all of its aspects, not just the metaphoric, but what the business is all about is happiness between people resulting in ultimate children. I mean, ultimate, you know, not in a eugenic way, but in a Simcha way.
Mm-hmm. What are you trying to suggest? You're saying that Simcha is associated with creation.
No, Simcha leads to creation.
Leads to creation.
Yep.
I hear it.
That is associated with creation because that sort of conduct with Simcha is ultimate creation. Right. Those are the children we want to have.
Right. It's an interesting idea. Thank you. Janine. Is to be b'simcha. Is to be b'simcha.
B'simcha. So obviously, it's a positive characteristic.
Right. Well, don't say obviously.
In the right way. For
right.
The right reason.
Right. Don't say obviously because of where we're going with this. But yes, it seems like if it's true that you can't be connected to God without simcha, then it would think it's a positive. But you could make the argument. Well, you'll see. You'll see. I'm going to show you now Ibn Ezra. Oh, sorry, Bruria?
No, I was just going to say that it seems that he's telling everybody how to be Sameach, but I think it's a very subjective idea, Simcha. You can't have a set of rules how to be Sameach, because everybody is Sameach in a different way. So I'm a little disturbed by
it. I mean, we haven't gotten any rules. I would argue that Torah can give us rules for pretty much anything. But Kohelas hasn't given us rules as much as he has listed opportunities. He said you can become Sameach by doing this, you can become Sameach by doing that. His only instruction, which we're gonna get to, is don't pursue Simcha. But I haven't gotten there yet. I wanted to first show you, within the context of this question of why should you be in a state of simcha, Ibn Ezra says this actually isn't advice. It's not advice of be in a state of simcha at all. Rather, all these lines that say be in a state of simcha, like we saw from chapter 3, from chapter 8, those are actually the fatalistic approach of people who are upset. Remember, he's a believer in the multiple voices approach to this book. That there, at times it's the fool speaking, at times it's the wise person speaking. So he says, when we see lines that say, you should be in a state of simcha, they're not happy statements. They're not, be in a state of simcha. Rather, it's like, yeah, this world is terrible, so if you have simcha, that's nice. If you take a look on your sheet at source number 11 as one example of it, when we saw the line that said, there's nothing good here other than to be sameach and to do good in one's life, right? So he says the following. Hizkir pam shenis zeha inyan ba'avur ha'itim. This is something that was actually mentioned earlier in the book. It was mentioned a second time here because of the part in between, which is that poem of there's a time for this and there's a time for that. The inyan hena devar ha'itim l'chol davar la'alos el osher o la'redes mimenu ve'alav ein la'osif mimenu ein ligrawa. He says the topic here is this whole business of there being times for everything, to ascend to wealth or to descend from it, and you can't change it. You can't add to it. You can't subtract from it. Al kain, therefore, ein la'amel tov, There's nothing good for the one who struggles other than find simcha in your portion, find simcha in your wealth, do good things in your lifetime. Shechayim tovim, living a good life. Oh yeah, perusho, she'asa tov b'chayav, she'kava lav sachar tov b'mosa. Or it means do good in order to receive good reward after death. The point is that what Ibn Ezra is trying to tell us here is that the statement here of go be sameach is not, yeah, go be sameach. It's, yeah, you might as well go be sameach. There's nothing else, so go ahead. If you take a look at number 12, you see it there as well. He's commenting on the verses that we saw in chapter 8, sentence 14, 15, where we said just be sameach in the amal that God gave you. So he says, this is a reaction to theodicy. The previous verse talked about how you see people who do good things who suffer and people who do bad things who thrive. So he throws up his hands. He says, Yesh tzadikim shemagia alehem ma shehaya ra'oi lagia l'rasha'im ma'asayem. You have righteous people who receive that which the wicked people should really receive for their deeds. V'hefach hadavar, as well as the opposite of that. When I saw that, I said, yeah, the whole thing's hevel. Az shibachti es ha-simcha. Then I praised simcha. Ki ein tov la'adam rak ha'achila v'hashasiya. Because the only good thing for a person is to eat and drink. That's all you can have. One last example, when the pasuk says, be sameach in your God-given amal. He's commenting on chapter 9, sentence 7. 9:7 was, yeah, go eat. Go eat your bread in simcha, eat your meal in simcha, drink wine with a good heart, because God has desired your deeds. So he says, in number 13, Zed dibur leiv b'nei ha'adam, this is the speech of the heart of people. That's what people say. V'hu holulus, and it is emptiness. So as far as Ibn Ezra is concerned, this is not Koheles's advice. Rather, it's simply what people say because they are fatalistic. So what is it that somebody, taking that as an approach to simcha? Again, sorry. He says you should be in a state of simcha, that Koheles says. Why should I be in a state of simcha? Maybe gratitude to God. Maybe because otherwise you do bad things. Maybe you shouldn't actually be in a state of simcha. Maybe this is just what people say. But what I do think is clear is the statement of do not pursue simcha. Don't go looking for it. And I think that was the implication of Rashi in source number 9. When Rashi said, if you're not sameach, you're consumed with pursuing things to make you sameach. Right? He doesn't want you doing that. And I think that's why in chapter 7, he says, chapter 7, sentences 3 and 4, he says, ka'as, frustration, is better than schok. It'll be good for your heart. And the heart of the chacham will be in the house of mourning. The fool is going to be the one who goes to the Beit Simcha pursuing simcha. God is going to send it to you. So do what you're supposed to do, and God will send it. That to me is where he is with this. You follow? Is that a little too depressing? I think it's realistic. Maybe a little fatalistic, but I think it's a realistic take. Okay, other thoughts on the emotions that we've discussed? Okay. Yeah.
Do you think that these, like Rabbi Ibn Ezra, I mean, he wasn't in the time of the 1480s where they expelled the Jews, but do you think it's related also how you interpret it depending on the area you're living in and how you feel the stand? Like it's a difficult period for a person and then you see things differently.
Yeah, Ibn Ezra did not have an easy life. He did not have an easy life. He spent a good amount of time wandering. He, you know, wandered all over Spain. He was in England at one point. And he's in the 11th century, you know. Pick a spot in Europe during the 11th century and tell me where it's good. Maybe there's an element of it. I don't know. Other thoughts before we switch gears to chapter 3? Yes, Ricky.
A little bit too banal, but he's not talking about the simcha of nachat, of being happy with your children, with your family. Is this too bulky?
I think that would be there, except that he keeps saying that you don't know who's coming after you. You don't know who's going to follow you. He doesn't talk about nachas from your kids. He talks about frustration with your kids. I don't recall seeing any line in the book where he said, your kids are good, or your kids are going to be good, or be happy
no,
that your kids are good.
But it's a kind of a simcha. It's a kind of a simcha. So enjoy it while it lasts, because yes, sometimes things happen.
Yeah. No, that's...
You can't live in the fear of something happening that they will take away from your simcha today.
Right. Right. Yes, Bria.
Yeah, he says that Ibn Ezra had source number 11,
yeah.
At the end of it says that it means to do good in his life, to receive good reward in his death.
Yes.
But this is the first time I hear anything at all about Olam Haba, as far as Shlomo. Like, I've never heard him say anything about reward in the next life.
Right. So, I mean, we talked about this in the very beginning when we did in the introduction, the fact that there are statements in Koheles that seem to contradict what we say elsewhere in Tanakh, such as one of the examples was, who knows what happens to the spirit of a human being? Does it go up? Does it go down? Is there any difference between the spirit of the human being and the animal? So you're correct that Koheles doesn't.
So even the word doesn't get this particular interpretation from, like when he says that at the end.
So I think... remember, Ibn Ezra's view is part of approach number one to this book. Ibn Ezra is a big believer in the idea that the overarching message of Koheles is defined by the parts where he says things that are true to Torah. That's what he believes is the true message. So he looks at chapter 8, sentences 14 and 15, sentence 14 where it says, hey, tzaddikim experience what the wicked should experience, and wicked people receive what tzaddikim should experience, and then I praise simcha. There's nothing better for a person than to eat, drink, and have simcha, and it will accompany him in his struggle, the days of his life that God gives him under the sun. So I think he's looking at that and saying the struggle is during the days of his life under the sun, and then he'll get his reward after that. I think that's what's driving that, because that's his inclination in terms of how he reads the book altogether.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, so let's go to chapter 3. I'm going to make a new recording out of this.